Sure, okay. I need a right side of this.
Your,
Yeah, that's okay, we're there.
Balls, right there.
One more time.
Don't you guys have these in your car?
So, number one's okay, right? And of course, it's not Y axis at all, it's, you know, it's just you write X, Y so many times, five is wrong place. Yeah. Oh, the wrong place, the bottom of five.
No, look at the
bottom. Bottom of five there, 10, 15, right? Yeah, okay, that's number one, check. Cool? The other thing, number two, is just to give you a sense, the distance of sun is 8 light seconds away. So that's why we're working in light seconds, because that's sort of solar system size. Okay, so the number two is just to give a scale. Gamma? 5/4. Now we're going to label the x prime and t prime axis. So this 5 going across is 4. Now, Bill did a really nice job actually explaining to me how this correlates to Damien's version, where this is 4. Take a parallel line across, right? Right there. And you do it carefully. It works out to the same thing. But I think it's easier to follow these grid lines. But that's another option you can do. Okay? So there's our 4, and our 8, and our 12, and this is 4, and that's 8, and that's 12, so there's a big place to connect. Okay, we're down to 4. So Brenda takes off. So Allie and Brenda and the Earth and the rocket ship are here at the start, the bed number 1. And then Brenda takes off, and the planet is, when you're on the Earth and you measure how far away it is, 10 light seconds away. All right, so... So that's bit number 1. So we're cool. You don't do anything else there. Cool. Then we're going to mark the planet's position every 5 seconds. So where is the planet? It's 10 light seconds away in the space direction. Space direction. Okay, so we're sitting on the Earth. We're figuring out how far away is this trip. Oh, the planet's over here. Oh, there's the planet. It's a blue planet. And 5 seconds later, where is it?
Straight up.
Straight up. There it is.
Keep going straight up.
Keep going straight up. So I'm taking snapshots, but the world line of the planet is just this line going up here, right? This is what the planet does in the Earth frame, because it's at rest, there's frames, right? That's the not moving thing. Check about that. Now, we got Brenda's path at 3/5 C. So she's on the T-axis, right? This is her path. I don't have a highlighter, so I'm going to scribble it. This is what Brenda's doing. Keeps doing this. Tell me when to stop. Yes. Because she has now got to the planet. All right. And there's this great donut shop on the planet. So she hangs around there for 5 seconds. A very quick break, very quick snack. Is it in her frame or Allie's frame?
It's
Is it Allie's frame? Both. What do you mean both? She's stopped moving relative to the Earth. She's sitting on that planet which is at rest. So it's 5 seconds in the Earth frame, which is Allie's frame and her frame. She's on the planet, but the planet is in the Earth's frame because they're not moving relative to each other. So I need to go up. So here we are, and we go 1, 2, 3, 4. There we go. So she has a very quick donut break. That she's doing there. Okay. Okay, so this is event number 2. Number 2. Number 1. Okay. Now, how long does a trip take in Allie's frame? Okay, so this is the event 1, event 2. As far as Allie's concerned, what is the time between those two points? Where do you see that on the graph?
Go straight across QCT axis.
Sorry, say again?
Go straight across QCT axis.
There we go. A little less than 17? The heck, let's call it 17. And that's the number you would get if you took, in fact, it's 10 light years away, traveling the speed of 3/5 C. That's how it should take you 17 seconds to get there. Okay? Cool. Yes, and then if you calculate it, it's 16.8. So with all these things, you can use the equations on the way, and the equations will be more precise. Okay. How long does the trip take from Brandon Street? Anyone have a guess?
15.3.
And on the graph, we read it along here, right? There's 0, 4 seconds past, 8 seconds past, 12, oh, yes. Well, if you want to calculate it, it's 13.3, 3 digits. All right, that looks roughly like it. Now, this one, Bill and I were working on the wording for this one. Because that's 11 is really vague. The thing is, she sets off, she gets the supplies. It's supposed to take her 17 seconds to get there. It takes her 13. How can she travel that? Because she's got a watch on, right? It's a good watch. It took her 13 seconds. But if you calculate it, it should take her 17. Her time feels normal. Her heart beating at the normal rate. She's breathing at the normal rate.
It's relative time, normal.
Yeah, but when she measures it, hey, you know what? This is great. I thought it was going to take me 17 seconds. It only took me 13. James?
The length for her is contracted.
Yeah. Because I didn't have to go 10. How far did she have to travel, James?
It wasn't contracted by a gallon, so.
Right, I said it wrong. You know what? That's good. Because Ernie McCarlin did the same thing. How far did the planet travel towards her? Right? Because she's at rest in her universe.
8 lights.
8? 8.
Where do you see that?
Drop it straight down.
Back to run.
There you go. As far as she's concerned, this is the her x prime distance. She was here, and that's how far she went in her x prime direction. Right? Well, she can again. She can go. This is how far the planet. See, the planet was far away, and the planet came to her. Came closer and closer and closer. And the planet made a very soft docking with her ship. Okay. And Howard's here, right?
No, it just skip to schedule.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So when he comes, I shut up immediately.
No, we're finished. I'm just saying, just to skip to schedule.
Yeah. So stop. Right. He told me to do
it. You got 2 questions?
Okay, so planet is the distance the planet traveled is shorter. It's only 8 light seconds. So that's 12. It's pushing that point. And if anyone's got the wording of these is what I'm testing out here because they were both. So there you are. What you've got there, this thing, that is space contraction. I didn't teach space contraction. You figured it out. So this is the with this one tool you take time dilation and the tool they work out everything else. Okay. When she gets the planet, she sends a radio signal home telling that she got there safely. Okay. So at this point, she sends a radio signal home. How do we call that?
45 degrees.
Okay. That's roughly 45 degrees. And then you just read off here. 20. A little more than 25. I'm doing a really messy version. Doing it more precise, I got 23.
Yeah.
Okay. When would Ellen expect to get a signal if there were no relativistic effects? Well, he expects it to take how long to get there?
Yeah.
How long to get there?
17.
And then, how long does it take light to come back? 10. So, he should be getting it at 27. And he gets it at 23. No, it's 27. Wait. No, I did something else. Hang on. You're right. It is. Now I'm thinking. It is about 25. Yeah. You know what? That's probably one of them typos. Let's pretend that. Okay. So it gets back to him at 27, and that's what he would calculate. Okay. And all right now. He said, but he figures he should send his congratulations at 10 cents. No, 15 is confused, isn't it? Okay, because he would not expect.
What?
27.
You don't specify a number 5, but it's 10 seconds away at light speed.
Oh, but that's what 10 seconds mean. If you go up to number 1, each square is 1 light second.
Okay.
Yeah, just going through. I'm going to stop here because right now I'm feeling like I don't know what I mean by 15.
Maybe minutes. I think you meant
that he sends his congratulations.
No, no. He should send it at 17. Yeah.
You know, further down the line.
What about 14?
Is how. No, you know, I'm getting confused here right now. Can I solve this question? This is not in the beta test. This has never been tested on people. I thank you for being my guinea pigs. I'm hoping that some of you think that, yeah, I see how you can do it, but I can do better than Kevin, and I want you to. We've got some great device blocks. I'm going to stop here and shove these other things. Okay. It's a good time to stop. Thank you, Karen Howard. Thank you. All right. Oh, number eight.
So thank you very much. Thank you very much to everybody for that very informative session. So as I mentioned a couple of days ago, we're going to have a little very, very informal feedback session. So you all met Howard on Tuesday morning when he came and gave his introduction. So he's back here now. He'll be in the program Friday afternoon. And this is just a gang of very informal feedback session that, as you mentioned, we really need your feedback and your ideas to tell us what you need, what's most useful. So Howard is going to conduct that over the next little while. So I'd just like to reintroduce him, Howard Burton, Executive Director of the Premier Institute.
Well, if this is your lunch, I think you don't have to feel guilty.
How are we for time? I mean, did you want people to go and do the one at Houston and then come back?
What's your story?
We did this last year. This whole idea of getting some informal feedback from you guys while you're in the white hot moment of creation here, and you're thinking about all sorts of things that that you liked about the program, which is nice. It's nice to hear obviously positive feedback, but what would really be constructive is to think about ways that we might be able to adapt or modify this particular program, or perhaps more generally, ways that that we can think about doing something for you guys outside of this program. So between now and next summer, maybe we can instantiate some concrete things. I mean, David's got to talk to you for instance.
He's
here. Okay. So he's got to talk to you about that. We've had lots of discussions about concrete aids, such as working on the website and making sure there are chat rooms, making sure that the dialogue continues, and having a presence also nationally by physically going out and doing some events in different places. And there, obviously, we're limited with resources and like everybody else, but we're also motivated to do things in the most constructive way possible. So it's often proved to be very useful for us to have this opportunity just to have a direct dialogue. So I can say a few more words to get the ball rolling, but I'd rather say less and listen more. So if anybody has some comments to start with in terms of either what they think might be worth doing somewhat differently next year in this program, or ways of iterating or expanding this particular program, or something completely different that would be a benefit to you that you would like to see the Institute do outside of this program. Yes.
I think that probably the facilitators and some of the scientists found that we're coming in on very different levels depending on our physics background. And now that I've been here for a week, I feel like if I was to come again, I'd be on a hopefully still on a different level than what I came in at And I'm wondering if there is any consideration to given sort of to a level one and then a level 1.3 or something. Maybe another year.
Right.
Because I think that I've got the sort of basis, but I've got it right now, whether I still have it where I start school in August again and keep it. But I think that probably some of the facilities have found that some of us are just so slow in grasping these concepts that what they thought they could get into an hour and a half, we're wanting it over sort of a 4-hour period so we can absorb it and make sure that we can make use of it.
That makes sense. So I'll take away the element of self-interest associated with that. Come back 3 or 4. We've had this before. So
you should do it at 10 level.
But that's a very good point. So I know that, and again, Damien and the others may have spoken to that. But one of the things we're trying to do is deliberately construct something so that people do have varying levels as they're coming in, because you don't want to be in a situation where you're just, we have something similar but different for the ISSYP. You don't want to be just preaching to the converted. You don't want to be just dealing with people who are already very well focused and very knowledgeable and have enough time to develop all sorts of things for themselves. You want to expand things so that you can pique the interest and curiosity and excitement and give support to people who might not be specialists in the field from a teaching perspective, from a pedagogical perspective. So that's certainly something to consider by way of expansion.
Yeah, and kind of following on that, I thought of some sessions like the Black Hole session we did today, which could have, you know, really had nice crossover to what we've been doing for this whole week. But I think almost a session I did, a quantum session, relativity session, because I almost felt like if I had 4 days in quantum, I would have felt a lot more confident in what I came up with versus 4 days of relativity. So it almost like a 3-day quantum with kind of a neat thing that we did, like a black hole today and the tours, or a relativity with tours and other areas of interest in research. Because I think the biggest thing that I struggled with, and we all struggled with, you know, as facilitators and as participants, is that you're trying to get your head wrapped around a concept, and you want to get in there and fight the ideas back and forth, but the facilitator is trying to get through the programmer, come on guys, and they bring it to a closure, stop. And mentally, we're just punches trying to learn the stuff, yet trying to get through it all. And I think we'd learn more by doing less, it seems.
So there's a little bit more focus, not effort.
Yeah.
Kind of following with, I guess, a multi-tier.
So. Yeah, and maybe in that sense I wouldn't call it tiers, but just
right.
Different programs.
Right. Wow. But I'm not going to have any. So,
We've been introduced to some new physics teaching methods that some of us have tried and some of us haven't, and Dave Doucette does some work in terms of research in that area, or working in that area. I'm not 100% sure. But it'd be great to have recommendations in terms of, check out this article or have that on the web or whatever, on a quarterly basis. And just to keep ourselves thinking about changing in the classroom, I think all too often we get comfortable in our modes of presentation and to be challenged to do crazy things, to step outside of our comfort zone and that kind of thing is good.
So could we do that? I mean, and I know that's part of the overall plan. Be following up in terms of emails and news groups and something along those lines.
Good. Or they have another job.
On a general note, if you could expand resources permitting into the generic teachers conventions versus the strictly science. Because we get our list in February of what's available at the convention. And we go down and we circle the programs we'd like to go to. And if there was something like this here, you'd get a broader audience, more people would learn about perimeter institution, more people would learn about what's going on in Waterloo.
So the idea...
Which would expand the entire base of ideas feeding in.
So what sorts of things do you think that we should be discussing at these broader conventions? Is it more of an FYI session about the programs that we have here, or
I had no clue of all the technological innovation that was going on. Like I said, when we were at the computing center, we know all about all the medical research going on in Edmonton. right west. We know about the cyclotron in Saskatoon, the veterinary school in Saskatoon. But when you get east of the Saskatchewan border crest, there's essentially, the only thing I'd ever heard about research in motion was they lost a lawsuit. And that they made blackberries. So if you could get into the more generic teachers' conventions where not everybody would go to a science council convention. Everybody goes to the teachers' convention, and if there's a session there that has to do with their discipline or is even close to it, because I've seen crossovers here with chemistry. And in Alberta, our Science 10 course is chemistry, physics, and biology all at once.
What science council? Like, I'm curious, what science
council? We have a science council of the Alberta
teachers. No, but what teacher council? In Ontario, we have generally science teachers.
Well, we have all the teachers in one particular area to go to a convention.
Oh, yeah.
And we have multiple sessions at that convention. So you could go to a session on the new social program, or to go to a session on what's happening with your pension, something to do with math, and they're all in one place.
Yes, it's you have to be local.
Yeah.
And that's something that we could actually go out and do. Is promote it and also promote the idea of at all levels to start introducing a little bit of quantum physics, just giving them little bits that they can understand that we at least understand enough of to present.
Somebody mentioned
how could Perimeter support you in that, Julie?
I got an answer.
Come on,
we could develop.
Come to our conventions.
Yes, develop a package that you and that's approved and vetted, of course, by PEI. What to do. You could present on our collective behalf at the Institute on whatever we think is the appropriate etymology with respect to either the outreach program, what we're doing with teachers, et cetera, generic enough, because there's other groups that are doing this with other types of teachers as well, how we're integrating research and education into what we do here, et cetera. And something that's generic that we also give you the support so that you can take that to your local area and present on behalf of us. So that there's rather than, because there's only one Damien to go around and do so many, but there's lots of us. And if you can boil it down to that package, we'll be representing Perimeter Institute, getting the name of it. But it's not just the name, because one of the interests, obviously, is theoretical physics, but from our point of view, this outreach is so unique. And has so many ramifications and potentials that I think that's where our mind lies, that this is phenomenal itself. And what you're doing and how you're reaching out to us is setting a bar and setting a standard and doing something that I don't really think has been done before, certainly not at this level. And I think that's equally as important as the groundbreaking research and all the other things. And that's something we can easily speak to, particularly from the perspective of the effect that it has had on us.
I think if you had a booth at like the Science Council conference, if you had a booth that promoted Perimeter and then had a session that talked a little bit more about the researchers and had access to a couple of videos or whatever, I think it's powerful.
Do you need a booth, or could you not just do a presentation? Like, I've done like, for example, after the first Einstein class, I did a presentation at SAO, the Science Teachers Association of Ontario. We have a big conference. So I went and presented one of the things that we had done, but part half of my presentation was also just telling people about Perimeter, telling people about the programs, and just sort of being a little, sort of PR person for them. And afterwards, I had a lot of teachers come up and say, how do I sign up?
But I think you get a lot of exposure at those booths by people just walking through. Because sometimes you look at the itinerary and you've got four things to go to.
Booths are harder to man. You
have to man them. Or yeah. Clearly, we can have presence.
Yeah,
a number of different ways.
A couple things. Reacting to what Alex said, on your website, you do an outstanding job of putting on some of your keynote speakers. And we saw several outstanding presentations by our skilled facilitators that can be very useful on your website, to go to visit Diana's classroom, go visit Ed's classroom, and put up, this is all about whiteboarding's about, or this is the way this particular master teacher presents how to do space-time diagrams. And because, we get as much as we can in our fatigue state in a week, but if that's sitting there, then we go back to it, and the transformation from that, the effect it will have on us to have a resource that we can't fly back to water leniency, but it's right there on our computer. Right. Really helpful. Right. Second thing is going on with what you guys have said. Like, you know, you've got Kirk and Dave and Sean come from the interior BC, and you've got BCAPT, you've got the OAPT. I think you planted some very powerful seeds to germinate little regional committees that will promote modern physics for you.
So how do we so we planted the seeds. How can we catalyze it somehow?
Well, I think part of Damien's mandate would be beyond an email, make a conference call to two or three people to say, you know, what do you need to visit, let's say, the Okanagan Regional Teachers Convention, where you offer a session for modern physics, and listening to what Bob said, you maybe 1 year we'll do quantum, and then the next year we'll do relativity, incorporate something else, or alternate. And you know, you can do that in conjunction with BCAPT and OAPT supporting. But one of the things we have in our beautiful nation is we're really spread out, we're really diverse, so we need to have little regional areas.
If you have that as an expectation, you guys have treated us very well.
Yeah.
And some way for us to be back.
Exactly.
So just since priorities, I have a question here, and then up at the back, and then over here. So, yes.
I guess a lot of this discussion is about how the Perimeter Institute connects with teachers to try to bring the level of modern physics up. Now, what about the students? So yesterday we were talking about contests, and I'm a big fan of the math contests at Waterloo. Those contests are, they're inclusive, they're accessible, they go to most of the high schools across Canada, and even at the student level, there's a real identification with Waterloo just because they're exposed to those contests from an early age. So some of the feedback from there's a physics contest as well, like the Sir Isaac Newton, and it was less positive from some of the physics teachers that I was talking to, less inclusive, et cetera, et cetera. But what I'm thinking, if you want to connect modern physics to the students, run a contest out of the Perimeter Institute on modern physics and try to get all high schools in Canada involved. Just make sure that you don't make the same mistake that the Sir Isaac Newton people seem to
do. Don't make it elitist, in other words.
Yeah, it's not elitist.
Encouraging instead of discouraging.
So just a word on that before I go up there. So help me here concretely. So what is it that the SIM contest does that makes it elitist as opposed to the...
I'll speak first and then turn it over to Dave. I'm a math teacher, and what the math contest does do, as I think a lot of us know, it's got an A part, a B part, and a C part for each grade, and the A part is actually pretty straightforward. Anybody can get the A part done and get all of them right. It's a question of how long. The top students get the A part done in about 3 or 4 minutes. The B part's a little bit more tough, and then the C is really, really tough, and that's where the distinction is made. The sense I get from the current Sir Isaac Newton is that they're harder right off the bat, so just sort of turn it over.
Yeah, I mean, the purpose for a lot of them is to offer scholarships, so you're trying to delimit people out of the contest process as quickly as possible, but our purpose at IC is very, very different, trying to get people in. So the contest, in any form that you have, like kind of like a science of letters, is to stimulate people to get involved in the first place, and then it's non-threatening, and it's you will have some positive results. So in this case, if for example, an average of 75 or 80 if it's a written test, it's much more positive than a result of 17% where the majority have walked away with a very bad experience.
Just get used to physics.
What it does to a well-run program, if there's awards, etc., at the local school level, is it just generates the name, generates the interest, and if it's a fun thing to do, so it's a fun test, but you can also put humor, and I think OAPT has done that in the past, and even the SIM contest has to some degree, has included humor and other things into it, so it's not just strictly physics, so it's made it very inviting for people to come in. And it's all part of the generic thing of the marketing of the name and the ideology that physics is not a painful thing necessarily, that it's fun and it's relevant.
And Sir Isaac Newton, for the last 15 years, has been running the test in the middle of the International Baccalaureate and advanced placement exam period. So I have students who are writing 16 different papers for their IB diploma, who have the SYN exam right in the middle of that. So I'm asking students to write an additional couple hours on top of 16 exams. This is
no. Okay, that's pretty good. Thank you. Question at the back and then over here.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to make a comment. Like, some of our provinces don't have provincial conferences. I know mine doesn't. Our PD, I think a movement, especially on the East Coast, is for professional development to be more teacher-based. So if I get any information outside of that, it tends to come from like the top down. I check our Department of Education website, and I think it probably happens in a lot of provinces that they just put updated posts of new information and that sort of thing. For example, for the physics section, there'll be like new updates, and there's links to just some different science companies and some different school websites. And I know that I always check that regularly, and I see that a lot of other teachers do too. And I think it would be a really nice way for you folks to have a wider audience and maybe generate some more interest, which is ultimately a good thing.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to make three points that come across my mind. One is that as an outreach thing, going back to the conference, I happen to be on an executive of the British Columbia Association of Physics Teachers. And the way I kind of envision it is that while one of us can go back and speak of how what are the benefits of getting exposure here, I would think that someone here, if your budget allows, who can go to the conference and do the presentation, be it as a ideally maybe like a keynote speaker, would be much more effective than me speaking about Perimeter Institute. This is just my opinion because I don't know as much. Now I can see Dave Fish knows a lot more because so I guess at the teacher level before. But personally, I would be comfortable enough to represent it well to really give it a punch. Where you guys had a speaker come and do a presentation about your outreach program and the research being done here, that might have a bigger punch.
Sure. So let me just respond to that before you go. I know you have 3 points, so I won't cut you off after point number one. But let me say that in my view, it's not a matter or situation necessarily. So there's a real role that you guys can play saying, I went to this particular program and this is what I learned and this is how it benefited me and this is how you can inspire other people to do something similar. And that's not to be confused very rightly with the idea of somebody coming formally representing the Institute and saying this is what the Institute is all about and this is how it came to be and this is what our mandate is, because it would be inappropriate to ask you to do that. But you can have some combination of the two, where you have your aliens going out and, sorry, I made you a generic quantity.
it's two different levels.
Yeah, you all got that promotional video about PI. So if you were to do a presentation, Paul, at BC Physics about something you do, it's easy for you to pop that video into a laptop, project it, just even, and that's approved by Perimeter. What is Perimeter all about? And then you could say, while I was there, we learned about this, da da da, bam.
Yeah, I'm just pointing out that's a different level than if a PI person was doing, for example, a keynote speaker.
I'll bet you if you set up a tour, okay, a bunch of high schools that would have Damien come in around your BC Physics conference and made it worth his while to get on a plane and go out there, he'd love it.
Okay, so we have to go back to you because you've got two more points that I cut you off on.
Thank you. The second thing is that I think for a number of here, we've been exposed to two different areas. One are the actual details of some of the modern physics, entanglement, and the working with that, the graphs we've been looking at and so forth. And the other are teaching techniques. While the teaching techniques, I think, we can absorb and percolate that fairly easily, to be able for us to take the material in terms of the actual physics and go back and use it and have that merge into what we teach, we need more support material. My background's in physics, granted, almost 20 years ago, and I'm finding it quite difficult to grasp all the stuff that I would like to expose the kids to, and this is more or less my only
exposure to this stuff in the few days here. Most textbooks are a bit older and don't go along to these concepts. So we would need more concrete resource of what was being covered here. Like right now, the ground we looked at an hour ago, I would not dare try to teach this to kids because I think I will confuse my, it will confuse myself and confuse my students more and do a disservice where kids will go, Chang doesn't know what he's talking about. What the hell do we know what he's talking about? Because I'm not comfortable with it. And then my last point is some of us have the latitude to teach something about relativity, something about modern physics. On the other hand, some of us have a distinct curriculum or mandate or syllabus, whatever you call it, of these are the topics you must cover in your modern physics section. And for, be it a provincial curriculum or be it an IB curriculum or whatnot. And in those cases, it would, I think, help if the physics community can get those writing the curriculum to splice in there things we're talking about, such as entanglement or such as the CT graph and whatnot. Because if it's not on the curriculum and we have to teach material that's on the curriculum that will be tested, the teacher probably will not have the opportunity to do something else.
So let me, before I turn it over here, let me just respond a little bit with my own views, which may be and arguably are worth maybe disregarding since I'm here. With respect to the idea of supplementary material and takeaway material and resources to be able to assist, that's certainly something that is first and foremost in our minds. So we're looking to find a way that we can give you concrete, not just takeaways, but also whole series of references when you're back in the classroom, and this is a dim and hopefully pleasant memory. So we're doing what we can not only to produce things by ourselves, but also link up with existing material that's out there. So we're certainly aware of that. That being said, so now we go into the more speculative notion. I guess for me, one of the frustrations that I have when I talk to people who are students who are in the high school is that they have a very, in my view, distorted view of contemporary science and maybe a distorted view of science itself, which is to say that there's this notion that everything's been done and the answers are all the back of the thread, and there's some sort of law-like, chronological way of doing this stuff. And if they know how to get, and then they take it further, you know, the people who know how to do it are smart, and people who don't know how to do it are stupid, and you know, this sort of thing. And one of the things that we're trying to do in our own way is to break down some of those stereotypes. And one of the ways that you do it, and it's sensitive when you deal with adolescents, I realize, and I haven't done this for some time, but one of the things that I think is useful to convey, if you can find a way to do it, is to say, well, look, these things are hard, and you don't always know the answer. In fact, lots of people who are doing stuff today, you don't know the answer. And in fact, if you really want to discuss aspects of interpretation of quantum theory, nobody knows the answer. And that's not to say that we should try to foster that by sending ignorant teachers into the classroom. I'm not advocating that. But I think there is some of that somehow
openness.
That's right. An openness that actually does need to be conveyed. And I'd also like, I mean, latterly, I'd like some help to be able to find a way of doing that to the students. And part of our outreach program is again trying to address that head on and saying, look, here are some open questions. That's why they're open. Nobody knows them. And moreover, that's the way science is done. And in a broader case for our outreach programs, the general public and so forth, we're thinking about lectures for next year. And one of the ideas that I've been kicking around is trying to think about really interesting, provocative scientific solutions that were wrong. That gained credence for 50 years or 100 years or 3,000 years or what have you. So anyway, that's one thing I wanted to respond to others, but I don't want to be talking, as I said. And there's something directly to say with what I just said.
Yeah,
sure. Why don't you just shout it out, and then I'll come over here afterwards.
I just thought to help people in the even the remote places to promote this seminar, to make a specific DVD using part of what's already there, but more focused on to what happens here, both for teachers and for students, because we also want to encourage students to come, right? And with that specific DVD, people can be more open in their school, in their area, in their district, or in their conferences. And supporting that way, and then also inviting Damien to the larger conferences. So covering in both ways, by having a more specific DVD for this particular issue. In the same way, I think I have heard that there's going to be a web page or a place where information is going to be happening of all the accumulated good results of what comes out here to support us when we go back to the classroom. So I think that would be amazing. I think people have to be actively participating in renewing it and putting it on. But that's something that will be there and be supportive. Also, the other aspect I know is years ago in the States, they did certain nuclei where people would go from places, I don't know, British Columbia, there are two or three places where people who had come to this seminar could meet maybe once or twice a year to support each other and comment on their results, or have conference calls in lieu of that wherever it's possible. But I think someone needs to organize and help supporting this nuclei to start up.
So, just to respond to that before I go back to some other questions and comments. Much of what you've said, we are actively in development with. So, specifically, the combination of the production of DVD and, in fact, several DVDs in series, as well as contributing that with Damien and others going to various conferences and so forth. As well as you mentioned the website, these are all things that we're thinking about. One of our issues, quite candidly, is that there's so much to do in this area, and there are, relatively speaking, so few people who are doing it, and certainly so few institutions of our particular disposition who are doing it, that it's a real question about how to prioritize, and not just strictly financial side, although obviously that's an issue as well. But on related aspects of personnel and related aspects of you want to be coherent. You don't want to be doing, even if we had unlimited funds, which we don't, but let's imagine for the sake of argument that we had unlimited funds. Well, then you would still have an issue with hiring de facto unlimited people to pursue all these different agendas. And you would still have an issue of, well, how do you manage all these people, and how do you make sure that the institute represents one coherent whole, and that you have an appropriate prioritization within all those different programs. Now, suffice to say, we don't have unlimited funds, but these are real problems. To some extent, they're good problems to have, because they mean there's an awful lot to be done, and you can really have a tremendous impact if you get your act together. But it also means you can't just, you have to do more than just say, well, here's a need, you've been doing that all day long. You have to think, what has the greatest impact? What can we do at an outstanding level? And what is scalable, as opposed to other things? Yes.
I think you're doing that. I think that the poster that comes out, I mean, if your foresight is such that you want to attract the people that, first of all, are very interested in the subject area, so have an aptitude and an inner desire to promote it. That's happening. I personally tried to convince 3 or 4 teachers to apply to no avail, so I don't think it would be a good idea to slowly, at this point anyhow, move your program into advertising the, and when you're here, we'd like you to work on the ideas of bringing this into your curriculum, because that's the thing that's that was unable, I mean, when I got any kind of rise, it was, and they treat you good. And it's, you get to talk to leading guys that don't put you on the spot and say, and you don't know what I know, and, you know, and just try to make them feel comfortable being here. And when I looked at that poster in particular, I felt, hey, I'm not sure if I got the level to go with this. I'm very interested in prosystematic. And when I got here, I can't say that I knew what was going on. I mean, I had part of my brain was like, they're asking questions of me, and we're doing this, and what's happening. But by the end of that week, as I think everybody's realizing here, they're becoming engaged, and you create a type of inner momentum that's not satisfied before we leave. I didn't get my full push yet. And I think sending us out the door with that kind of fire in our pants is exactly what's going to do the best thing. So, you know, I think you're rolling that ball forward. And I think as soon as your tables start to deplete and you've hit everybody that has that inner desire to start moving it into a different type of approach, like maybe bringing maybe less specialized or presenting your poster in a less specialized form, that might be the best time to do that.
Let me ask you one question. Based on that. If we were to somehow, and I don't want to go into details, but just if we were to somehow marry this program or some variation of this program with some level of formal accreditation, so if one were to come here for X amount of time and you can decide whatever that is, there would be some little asterisk beside your name, and it might be, you might have some salary perks, or you might. Anyway, it would be. I don't know, and I'm sure some of this gets into, ministry guidelines and union stuff and all the stuff that I don't have any desire to be an expert in. But I'm just wondering if that would be a worthy goal to aspire to, in your view, or if it's a waste of time.
This pulls in everything that you've been saying and what you just mentioned a few minutes ago, and I think that's central to the theme. You talked to high school students and their view on science. Where did they get the view from? Unfortunately, from the method of indoctrination into science. What we saw yesterday when Diana presented was how, with very simple techniques that have come out of PER research and other kinds of research, how to engage students into discover how to put together the ideas of science, by leading them to discovery, by guided discovery. And this is a fundamental shift, and there's piles and piles of research out there to support that. Not only does it produce better student learning, but better student attitudes about the processes of science. Right? These are the fundamental processes of science. So if what you're talking about is perhaps a level where teachers can come here and be immersed in some of these techniques so that they, when they come back, they not only have more of understanding quantum physics, but a much deeper understanding of the modern methods of educational pedagogy that they can directly translate not only into their classroom, but if they have enough expertise, here's what you could be presenting on. It's not just about the Perimeter Institute, but how the methods of educational technology have changed dramatically and are changing dramatically now to produce exactly the results that you're hoping to achieve. This is hitting on all the cylinders at all of the time, and is based on our own scientists and our own PER researchers.
Just actually going a little bit backwards here to something that you said of, you know, how you said the students don't seem to grasp the whole idea that there's more out there that's not discovered. Perhaps producing some posters with those questions. Do you know how black holes work? We don't. Like, something that's catchy,
right,
that we could have in our classrooms, in the hallways of the schools, that just little catchy phrases, questions, have them thinking. Very simple, fairly economic.
Excuse me, sorry, I'm not being discriminatory. Oh, I am, but I'm not being.
I'm just going to bounce something to extend back to follow up what you're saying, and that possibly the Perimeter Institute could go backwards a little bit, and you'd be winning with both students and teachers, and maybe, I'm just throwing something out, call it Grade 9 Quantum Day. And what you do is you set up one per semester, send it out to the, at the school level. Perhaps they would like to engage in an hour-long set of activities. The teachers would kind of see as a role model some activities that perhaps aren't black and white and a little bit of what science is. The students would have almost like a fun day of science, or like what, an hour period, with no first place, second place, third place. There's no losers. The only loser is somebody who doesn't want to participate. And so everybody feels good about it. Maybe at the end they all get participation certificates, and they've been introduced to quantum physics at the grade 9 level a little bit, and so that when they have to choose their high school curriculum courses later on which aren't compulsory, they'll say, I remember taking a little bit of that, I want to take physics courses, and that's when we get them in the senior grades to do more.
Yeah, and that brings up a question, so I think Paul?
Yes, Paul.
As Paul mentioned, when you talked about curriculum, the constraints of the curriculum and so forth, and one of the things that I was thinking about is, I understand and appreciate that, but to some extent, what we're really talking about is we're talking about motivation. We're talking about the idea of bringing to the consciousness of the kids in the classroom, hey, here are some really neat things that are going on. Here are some things that people still don't understand. Here are some really bizarre, look, projectile motion is not interesting, right? It's not. Maybe it's interesting in the sense of law-like regularity, and you can solve things from a finite and quite small number of premises and derive your equations and all the rest of it. But that's a far cry from the bizarreness of the world that's represented by entanglement and these sorts of things. So if you can convey that at the grade, there's no reason you can't. At the grade 9 level, if you can convey that without any mathematical sophistication, you don't have to know linear algebra, you don't have to know any of that stuff, but you just get a taste of that sort of thing, then I think that goes a long way towards piquing people's curiosity and giving them a very different perspective on what physics is or what physics can be. So often, I encounter people at the other end of the food chain, who come to me and they say, you know what, I hated physics in high school, and I flunked it, and blah, 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 blah. And these are reasonable, educated people, they're professionals and all the rest of that. And then on the other side, when they're in their 30s or their 40s or their 50s, they start reading popular science books and start kicking themselves that they didn't actually think about or participate in any sort of scientific discourse when they were younger. And I think what we can hopefully learn from that, you don't have to learn anything from it, but what we as a society can learn from that is that we have to find a way of stimulating them. We have to find a way of piquing their interest. We have to find a way of breaking down that wall. Something like a grade 9 quantum day is a perfect way of doing it. So I'll go back up here. There's one other thing before I do I'll say that after I do here.
First off, I wanted to say that I think the week was a success for me because I learned a lot about quantum physics. The quantum theory. I learned more about special relativity than the limited amount I teach. And so I plan on going back. I am more enthusiastic about this. So I want to say it was a success, and thank you very much. The interesting thing is, I know for myself, Wednesday morning, towards noon, I hit the wall. And I just said, this sucks. I feel like an idiot. I don't understand what's going on. And fortunately, with some perspective, I got past that, and part of what helped were the facilitators. I think what I want to say is from what I understand from talking to people who were here last year, these two areas, the one area, the concepts and stuff, and the educational pedagogy thing are coming closer and closer together. And so I think that's something to really work on. So I think you've got a nice synergy happening here, and so I think the team concept of bringing the content and how the content and how we're to present the content and how we can learn the content, as those come closer and closer together, I think that's going to become more and more powerful.
So let me ask you a question based on that, and something that the gentleman up here said, I can't remember. Would it have been a more satisfactory experience for you, in plural, if we had spent this week and just focused on one of those two things? So just focused on quantum theory, or just focused on special relativity, or was the juxtaposition of those even the relativistic quantum theory?
No.
It wasn't one thing or the other that was, what it was is, you know, we need value, we're getting value for dollars spent, and what it is we just open the top of the head and we just jam stuff in there. And for a while, I just couldn't take it, and you had the cartoon, somebody had the cartoon up here, can I leave the room, my head is full?
Okay.
You know, like, that's how I felt, you know? So it wasn't that it was one or the other, what it was is, the last couple of days, we spent a little bit more time taking the stuff and having a chance to talk about it, to argue about it, to do a little bit more hands-on with it, and then the stuff, you know, started to make more sense to me.
Right.
And let's face it, part of that is we tend to be the kind of people, as students, how do we put this? You get the maximum amount of stuff if you just get there and you just, here it is, here it is, here it is, right? Whereas it helps sometimes to have a break, to be able to concentrate on it. And we did, we covered a huge amount of stuff. And I'm just saying that I think it's getting better. I think the combination, you've got a good group with the facilitators, with Damien and other people coming in, that as that stuff kind of melds together. Yeah. The other thing which is kind of separate from that is, as far as professional development for teachers, and I don't want it to sound like I'm crying in my beer here, but by and large, we don't tend to get the appreciation sometimes that we feel we deserve. And to come to something like this and to feel that we're special, because I mean, you made us feel pretty special. You know, and that in itself is probably as much of the educational experience as anything, is because we come in and say, hey, you know, we're pretty special. Look what these guys are doing for us. Yeah, this is really, and I think it really puts us in a frame to really want to learn and to get better ourselves and to promote what's going on. Because, yeah, you know, what an experience this was right across the board. You know, and so I really want to thank you for that, because it's been a neat time. Damien's been great. I think sometimes he's kind of felt, you know, some of the questions come at him like, okay, how am I going to redo this to make it make sense? But, you know, it's been good. You know, it's been a good time.
Let me switch gears and ask people here two other questions. First of all, there's an issue of, there's a serious issue about the lack of women in science. Women in certainly in physics, and in theoretical physics is probably the worst in that respect in terms of the distribution. And let me ask you just a concrete question. So there are those who maintain that one can do specific programs that would inspire girls at high school to be more interested in physics and science and somehow move things closer back to the situation of parity, or closer to a situation of parity. And then there are others who say that at the end of the day the problems are quite systemic and run much deeper, and that it would be better to spend your resources and your time and your effort at developing programs that would target science and mathematics and so forth to girls at a younger age. More sense to do something at an earlier stage. So we're thinking about ways that we can contribute in a more meaningful way to this, and I'd like to hear your views, because you have a lot of experience.
Can I make a comment as someone that left with a scholarship to do my master's?
Sure.
When I went to do my master's, like, I had an answer grant to go and do it, and I left because they wouldn't give me a year off to go get my teaching degree. And I was looking at, and I've read it, so a lot of women leave. And it's, you have to have time to go if you want to go have a family.
Right.
Then, and when you come here and you hear, you do your best work when you're 25, like, I would consider going back when my family's older just to become a professor or something like that. When you hear stuff like that, it shuts you down. So it has nothing to do, I was top of my class when I graduated.
So it's not a time.
It has nothing to do with the interest in the aptitude. I also had a professor that told me once, walked into the classroom and said, is it true that men are better at women are better at math and science than women? He didn't say it. And things like that are systemic through. Now I had another professor, like male, female, at the school where I was at, there was female professors there in physics, and that's what you need. Strong female physics teachers in the high school. I have females going on in physics. And that's what you need, is role models for those girls.
So you don't think, so just to paraphrase what you're saying so that I understand it, So in your view, there's not an issue per se at the high school level or even below the issue?
No, and not in some, it has to do with lifestyle choices. When you get older, the supports for females, like you can't, it's similar to medicine right now. There's a lot of people that don't want to do medicine anymore because they are to Generation X and whatever, Y and whatever. They're not willing to sacrifice everything for their job.
So it's a lifestyle issue. So, okay. Regular participants over to you.
I see a problem in our high school, which is part of the way the model of teaching junior science. Quite often in junior science, this is not to say a general blanket statement that I've expressed this to some colleagues, is that the junior science are taught by non-physics people. And the junior science is where a student gets the chem by fist from one teacher. It's a very common model, not the only model. And a lot of times, then the physics is put on the bottom of the barrel because the junior science teachers tend to be a little bit afraid and not knowledgeable. And it's not unlike sometimes the thing that comes across there to the kids is, well, that's the physics stuff. You worry about that later. We just kind of fizz around that a little bit. We spend a little bit more time on what I know, which is biology and chemistry. The fizz gets a short end of the stick. Myself, I was lucky enough to go through school where the students rotated between teachers. One third of the term was with a chem teacher, one third was with a phys, one third was with a bi. And in that context, actually the phys, in my opinion, was done well. I had a teacher who was passionate about the subject, the topic that he or she was teaching. Where in a lot of the current model, where one teacher does all of it, I've seen many more cases of it being done poorly than being done well. And right there, that kills the participation rate in physics. Physics has the smallest number of students taking it compared to biochem, at least in British Columbia. And it certainly kills the female interest in it because girls are not being advocated into that.
But this is not true. And so this is a systemic problem, clearly, but it doesn't seem to be gender specific, right? I mean, why would more girls be turned off by doing
But yes, it is in some ways. It is in some ways. Especially in junior science, there are, and again, I'm speaking from my experience in British Columbia, there are more women teaching junior science than there are men. So the role models
are
more on average.
There was a comment over here.
Yeah, I'm just going to say a couple of things. We had now a grade 10 provincial exam in science. And the specific reason for that exam is to force grade 10 teachers to teach physics and earth science. And that's a direct quote from the person at the ministry who's in charge of the exam. The reason it was brought in was to force people to teach physics at the grade 10 level. As far as in my experience, and I don't know if there is any sort of a cultural issue in other areas, but certainly in the 20-some years I've been teaching physics, it's been balanced, but there hasn't been a gender issue. My best students have been equally male-female. My only theoretical physicist who has come through that I know has gone on and gotten a doctorate in theoretical physics was female. So it hasn't...
So not only the best students, but just the number of students. One can imagine the best students are equally distributed.
Yeah,
the number
but
they're both.
But they've gone on and it's been balanced and it's, yeah.
Okay,
well, as some of you will know, it's a bit of a hot button issue for me when, you know, people will come in and say, oh, look how many women there are here. This is really great. Like, to me, I guess that bothered me because I think, well, why wouldn't there be women here? There's certainly a balance in my physics classes in school, and I would expect there to be a balance here. And maybe there's a perception that they're not out there, and maybe in some science departments, women are underrepresented. In our department, we are like 80% women in the whole department. There was a woman in our board who wanted me to get involved in a program to encourage female students in math and sciences. And she wanted to take the girls out of the school and do something with them separate. and then send them back in and have them sort of share with other girls in the school, which to me is sending a message to them, you're different. Let's take you away and brainwash you so you don't think that you are, and then we'll try and get you to brainwash other girls to think that they're not different either. And I think the best way is just by, you know, having women doing what women do and having those people, you know, out there. Maybe if you're sending a speaker to a class, sometimes there's a woman presenting, not just always a man, and that just happens to be the qualified person who's there speaking, and just by having role models, I think.
So I appreciate and understand that, yes. Although I should say there is an issue. Mm-hmm. Absolutely no question about it. If you look at, you know, the quality of people at the highest levels, and then you do just a simple analysis and you look at the whatever how many women there are vis-a-vis men, it's completely skewed.
Now it's something like 16%, is it not?
I don't know.
14-16%.
All I know is that when I'm doing recruiting, it's inevitably a man that I'm recruiting. Now, there are all sorts of possible explanations for that, and you mentioned certainly
that's
many
what I looked into.
And so I'm trying to think logically if there's any correlation at the high school level or below, and what I'm hearing so far today is there's not very much, which is good to know. So Roberta,
I think when you look around us here, sorry, Diana. It's reinforcing what Ben was saying. Frankly, being a high school teacher is much more family-friendly than going and doing a PhD. Well, we had Paula Heron talking, and she talked about how she delayed pregnancy, and is not. She's having to fit it around. She had to first make her mark, and then she talked to us at the conference out here. It's being a high school teacher is really family-friendly, and for the most part. That's what you have to go through to go that next step, isn't it? So, does it sound like you need to get at the little girls? Or the, you need to help support the young women, actually.
Yeah.
The ones who want to do it.
Yeah.
The ones that are out there talking to us at lunch.
Great.
Turn
in front of me and then behind. And then I think I've already abused my time by factor two, which is my normal.
I get a lot of phone calls from people going, I need to get a science to get into university, give me the easiest one.
Right.
And invariably, I've heard that's bio, I've heard that. Never is it, physics, that's the easy one. And so a lot of people are just using science where I am as a stepping stone, and truthfully, maybe 10% of our student body wants to go to university anyways. And if they were like myself, I had no idea, what kind of jobs are there in physics? Like, even that played a part in my decision to what to do. And all I know now is that the decline in interest in science overall is really waning. So just that's where the professional development in my area is.
I'm not sure if I have too many negatives here. So the decline was waning, which means it's going up, right? So is it? It's going down.
Yes.
The interest is going down.
Yes.
In science.
And I don't know if that's because the students where I work are just having a string of poor teachers, or they're not in, or the oil fields calling, and they just want to get out. And so what we've been trying to do is build excitement in science by getting names in and brought them. Bob McDonald to do a talk and video conference to the entire division, students, teachers, everything. And that went over really well, so I invite Damien or anyone who's willing to come out. But just the excitement level about any science is going down. And I was sort of saying, well, you might be doing physics next year, you should come. And I'm like, oh, I'm a bio teacher, I'm a backup person. And I said, oh, fear. I come here and I'm now excited, and I think I could promote that excitement by seeing some of the great things that I've seen from Diana and the Olympians and everything. So I'm excited now, and I'm hoping I can pass that along. So I think that might be part of it too, sort
good.
Of combination.
Thank you. So one more comment, and then I think we should wrap it up. I'm
I'm picking up my way on this.
It's almost more a question as to whether it's physics specifically or sort of the academic sciences in general. I mean, are we seeing that the representation of female faculty members in chemistry and biology? Or and the other question is, it physics or is it the more sort of theoretical subjects, the less, if you want, pragmatic or applied? I've been thinking theoretical physics, and mathematics is actually called applied mathematics. Pure math, and computer science, the theoretical computer science. There isn't so much theoretical biology. There's little we can
do. I think in about 50 years.
So it's just, my question, is it really physics that we're seeing in it, or is it more systemic? Do you have a bigger problem?
But I mean, from my, so I don't know the answer to that. I guess my response is it's very interesting for me to know, at least in my little corner of the world, where things are okay, where they're starting to be, where the evidence is starting to display itself. And well, this is certainly helpful for me. But I mean, I think it's highlighted a broader issue, which is the one you've raised and many other people have touched on, which is the decline of interest in science generally. And if that's in fact the case, that's more concerning. There's a whole other category of people I wanted to get to, but I don't have the time, and I've taken up too much of your time, which is how you can also. So if the girls and the women don't need any special attention, and based upon what I'm hearing, they don't.
Not at that level.
I think, no, at that level. That's not that level. I think the slackers do. That's a hobby horse of mine.
Guys, I would say what you're doing with ISSYP, where you have an opportunity for some female researchers to be there mentoring. I think that's huge because you're getting the girls who are really interested already, and they get to see the Fotinis, or they get to see some of these women who are excelling. And I think also with the public lectures, where you are able to bring in Lisa Randall, and I'm not saying you're going out and being token female, Lisa Randall's top for the field, but that sort of thing, that if you can help provide, like we don't know some of these names, but if you can help provide that sort of, those DVDs or whatever of that lecture, where you just show the possibility, not just to the girls, but to the boys too, that, hey, look, women are at the top of this field.
Yeah, I think, so I agree with both of those. They're obviously very different, but they both are things that we're. Thanks. And I do want to, sorry, I want to, overstate my welcome. I want to thank you all very, very much. I know you're here another day, but it really is, I mean, it's nice to hear the nice things that you have about the program and about us and Damien and so forth, and it's very much appreciated. I also want to say that it is an issue that teachers aren't as supported as they should be in our society, and even at a local and regional level. And when people here talk about the fact that it seems as if we are very pleased to have you and supporting you and making you feel as welcome as we can, that is true, and that does come from the heart. And everybody in this building, on any side that you go to, whether it's the administrative staff or graduate students or postdocs or faculty, they all have a tremendous amount of respect and admiration for what it is that you do. And all of them, certainly on the research side, can point to various times, I'm sure you've heard this a zillion times before, in their high school career when they were influenced very, very positively by one or two salient high school teachers. And so each one of them carries a story that should confirm when you're lying awake at night wondering if you've made the wrong career decision. But you certainly haven't in all cases, I can say that. So thank you all very much for coming, and have a great rest of your experience. Thank you.